This episode is brought to you by the 1-4 Group Incorporated, a leading supplier of innovative dormancy and sprout inhibiting products for the potato storage industry. They believe that sustainability is intrinsically linked with the concept of stewardship. 1-4 Group practices sustainability by helping farmers minimize product loss using their family of biocontrol products. Learn more at 1-4group.com.
Welcome to the Potato Field with Spudman. I'm Zeke Jennings, the editor of Spudman and the host of the podcast. Joining me today from northern Minnesota is a father-son farming team, Justin and Sander Dagan. Welcome, gentlemen.
We're glad to be here, Zeke. On our farm, we grow many, many crops, five or six typically every year in a rotation. But potatoes is our favorite crop. We're just thankful to be involved in potato production because it is wholesome. The potato business isn't always glamorous, but it is wholesome. And we believe that if potato consumption quadrupled in our country, the only losers would be the medical industry because there'd be less people going to the doctor. So that's my story.
That's for sure. And you say wholesome. I mean, could you expand on what you mean by wholesome? Just the people in it, or just the nature of growing the crop?
Yes. It's got to do with fiber and vitamin C and potassium, and also the family-oriented industry that we have. You know, we just know most of the potato production farms around the United States are family-oriented farms, and I've just been blessed to have my family involved. We've grown seed potatoes for over 100 years on our farm, and it's truly been a family enterprise. And we're a faith-based organization, honestly. We trust the Lord to provide wisdom and strength for us each new day, and we're thankful to be here.
No, Justin, you and I have met at like the past potato expos and the National Potato Council meetings where, you know, you often before a meal will get up and say a prayer, and you are very, very open about that. And so we appreciate that.
Gladly.
Could you give a little bit of you touched a little bit of how long you've been growing. Your family's roots there in northern Minnesota, and you guys are really close to the Canadian border. This goes back to what, the 1880s?
Yes.
Yeah, so my great-great-great-grandfather homesteaded in the same township in the same county where we currently farm in 1882. And the next generation started growing potatoes in 1917, and we've been growing potatoes ever since.
And have you always been, you guys are focused on seed growing, correct?
We are in a restricted seed area. It's an isolated area, but is restricted to certified foundation seed production. So we're blessed to be located where we are.
And are you focusing on like early generation, and what varieties do you typically grow?
So our farm has been moving towards a closed system where we actually produce, we grow the G1s, G2s, and G3s, and sometimes G4s, but we don't bring in seed from other areas. We like to keep it on our own dirt and produce it from there. We grow reds and whites and russets, about 10 varieties, and just get some more management with more varieties and more management with the early generations, but we're getting pretty good at it.
The 10 varieties, that's quite a few. Do you have any favorites that you like to grow, or is that number growing or shrinking, or are you expanding?
We purchase all of our seed stock just from a laboratory greenhouse. We have two or three in the United States where we purchase our seed stock. And it seems as though there are new cultivars. They're not even named yet. They're just numbers which are showing good potential. And those are the ones that we focus on from year to year. We oftentimes bring one or two new cultivars to increase because somebody like us has to grow them so that we can get a large quantity and get a really, really good view of the quality and yield characteristics of the variety compared to just having a small trial. So yeah, we've got some varieties been with us. We grow russet Burbank, obviously. And then every year we have some new varieties which have promising characteristics. But we enjoy that. It's kind of like being on an adventure. You don't know what's around the next corner.
Well, yeah, you guys are almost first line of defense there with the new varieties. So, I mean, somebody has to get out there and start growing the acres to supply the growers down the line. So now geographically, your farm is actually located north of the 48th parallel, which, I mean, that's getting up there. Like I said, you're really close to the Canadian border. Now, I would imagine that makes you one of the northernmost farms in the country. Could you share a little bit on the growing season, where you guys are, like how long is it? When do you typically plant and when do you typically harvest?
Yeah, so our farm is located on the eastern edge of the Red River Valley. The Red River Valley is shared by North Dakota and Minnesota, highly productive soils. And we're about 30 miles south of the Canadian border. And now we're in the middle of February and we just went through a period of, I want to say 10 or 11 days when we did not reach 0 degrees. The high temperature was below zero and actually 6 or 7 of those days that we didn't reach 10 below. So I just went through a cold stretch, but being in a continental climate, we do get warm summers. So we like to get our potatoes in the ground in the month of May. And we start digging in the first or second week of September and we get done when we get done.
Now for something like a Burbank, I mean, do you need pretty much the entire growing season to get that mature enough to the yields that you want? Are you really pushing it by the time it's harvest time?
We do have to strategically plant different varieties at different times. Our Burbanks we plant on the front end versus a Red Norland, which is what we like to finish with that. And then come harvest, it's actually reversed. So the Burbanks planted first, harvested last. Norlands planted last, harvested first. Mm-hmm. So there's always some planning that goes into that, and it never works out quite the way you want it to. But you have to plan to succeed.
I should add, Zeke, that we don't have huge yields here. You know, okay. We my friends in the Columbia Basin typically talking about 35 ton, 40 ton. You know, around here, it's more like 10 ton or maybe 15 ton in a really good crop. But we have to maintain proper size for seed quality. So we kill all of our vines in August, maybe early August, to prevent any disease transmission which may occur. So those are just some of the challenges we face in this geographic area.
And how would you describe the soil there?
So we are on the very edge of the Red River Valley, and I would call our soils sandy loam. We do have capability to hold moisture versus some other soils that potatoes are grown on. And we're actually almost all dry land. We have irrigation on our seed stock where we grow our G1s and G2s because we can't risk losing them. But the bulk of the rest of our potatoes are all grown on dry land and we depend on rain, and that doesn't seem to be a problem around here, getting enough rain.
No, you guys have gone through some really wet harvests, especially in 2019. You guys went through a really terrible harvest with the rain and the flooding. So, it doesn't feel like we're short of moisture here in the Midwest in recent years. you mentioned that you grow a lot of crops. What else do you grow in the way of cash crops? And what does your rotation cycle and your rotational crops look like for your potato acres?
We like to extend our potato rotation out. The very minimum amount of years, we have a four-year rotation on the tightest rotation for potatoes. We also rotate with hard red spring wheat that's a big crop in the Red River Valley. Sugar beet is another crop. We grow corn, soybean, edible bean, occasionally canola. So we got a good mix of crops to grow with.
Well, another thing regarding rotation is just a number of years ago, the way our land was managed, we actually had an average rotation of 14 years. And that's not uncommon, where we will be planting on land that hasn't had potatoes for 40 years. You know, so that's to our advantage, because it just increases seed quality when you have total freedom of pathogens like that. So that's one thing we appreciate about where we live.
No, that's really interesting that you can, at that point, at 40 years, 14, you know, is it basically virgin soil at that point?
Well, very nearly so. It may have had potatoes back in the 1940s or 1930s when everybody grew small potato patches around here. However, we do notice better yields and better quality on land that has not had potatoes for many, many years. So we're glad to be that.
No, that's really interesting. That's an incredibly long cycle. So you mentioned that you have very limited irrigation, just basically the one pivot then?
At this time, yes. We have limited groundwater. Okay. So either you have to build a reservoir, a holding tank, you might say, or you have to have access to groundwater, and it's fairly limited here. So we do have some opportunity to expand irrigation in the years ahead, and we do plan on doing that. But right now we want to be sure that our field year one and field year two crops have good production.
And on the flip side of it, when you do get like the flood of 2019, I mean, does that change your process at all after you go through something like that? Is there anything really that you can do to mitigate your risk for excess water?
You know, it's so unusual where the vast majority of potatoes in North America are irrigated, and the growers would not even think about planting potatoes without irrigation. In our environment, with our rainfall, we are getting to a point where we will not consider planting potatoes without tile drainage. And it looks like in 2021, 100% of the acres that we plant potatoes on will be tile drained. And that has been a significant advantage to just consistent yields and consistent quality. We started tiling maybe 12 years ago, and it's been a big advantage. It's a huge investment on the front end, but it's really contributed to good quality and good yields. So we're opposite of many potato growers in the United States. We're trying to get rid of excess water versus focusing on irrigation.
How did you come across that technology? And, you know, when did you decide that this was something that might work for you guys?
We went through a time period in the 1990s where we had excessive precip. We were having years when there was 200, 300% normal precip, and it actually caused us loss, field loss. We were drowning out areas in the field, and we realized with the increasing expense of growing early generation seed potatoes, we could not afford that anymore. So we began, I think we tiled 200 acres the first year, and immediately recognized soil health benefits. The tile doesn't take away any moisture that the crop would use. It just takes away excessive moisture. So within a year or two, we noticed our soils were healthier. They were not going into an anaerobic state from having too much groundwater saturate them. So in our area, we get about 20 inches of rain per year. And in June, July, and August, we normally get maybe 3/4 of an inch per week. And of course, it never falls exactly that uniformly, but tile has really increased soil health for us. So it's been a big advantage.
Do you also do some precision monitoring to make sure you're only tiling away need to do that to make sure that you're only tiling away as much water as you absolutely need to?
Again, the tile does not have the ability to remove any necessary moisture. All it removes is the excess moisture. So if we will go through a time period without any rain or precip, the tile will quit running, you know, because it will have already accomplished its goal. But in the meantime, you have created what would be an empty sponge. So if we get a 2-inch rain or 3-inch rain, it soaks in a very healthy manner. So it works great.
Do you struggle with black spot or pressure bruise in your potato crop? The proven biocontrol 1-4 site helps increase deliverables to your shed or plant by reducing the severity and indices of bruise. Incorporate 1-4 site into your existing storage program for unprecedented success. Learn more at 1-4group.com. And now back to the podcast.
Switching gears a little bit, Justin, you're a past National Potato Council president. I always see your name at this meeting or that meeting. You're very involved in policymaking and all that at the state and regional levels. What have been some of the biggest things that you've learned and taken away from those experiences?
I'm really proud of the history of the National Potato Council and Potatoes USA, but I've been particularly blessed with the legislative side. And you may remember an unnamed first lady a number of years ago tried to remove potatoes from the school lunch program. And it took us significant effort, but we were able to largely restore that. And it's those kind of stories that I remind growers around the United States that having a unified voice in Washington, D.C. is priceless. So I always support the National Potato Council and those efforts, and really glad to be involved for the years that I was. And the battles continue. It's an education process with our legislators, because many of them do not know how the family farm, production agriculture, the active environmentalists that we all are as family farmers, how we think and act. So we need to constantly be up on Capitol Hill sharing the story, and I'm glad to do it.
Sander, have you and your dad talked at all about you kind of following and continuing that kind of line of work?
About 4 years ago, I did join the Minnesota Area 1 Potato Council. And a couple of years after that, I was elected to the board of directors at the Northern Plains Potato Growers Association, which is our local. It's not a state organization, but it's North Dakota and Minnesota. So I've been involved with that and learning about how the potato industry works in both of our states. And it's been a great learning experience.
Does that getting yourself out there and is that come naturally, or is that something you have to kind of force yourself to put yourself out there front and center?
I would say so. Yes. It's a little bit of both.
Justin, does that come naturally for you?
You know, it comes back to the wholesome part. I'm just so thankful to be involved in this industry. I could advocate on behalf of many different crops, but it's easy to advocate on behalf of potatoes. And you know, my family grew up, every year our annual vacation was a National Potato Council meeting somewhere, and we just developed lifelong friendships. And we just realized there's a common thread running through the potato industry, just good people, and we're really glad to have been involved over those years.
Yeah, I've been editor of Spudman a little over 2 years now. And when I was starting, everyone at the company I worked for said, you are going to love working with the potato industry because the people, it's a tight-knit group. They, you know, everybody kind of knows each other and everybody just can't wait to help each other. And it's really proven true. It's been just a great joy just to get to know everybody and people like yourself. So everything they told me up front has proven true. This is a really great industry to be a part of. Sander, you and your dad are working very closely together on the farm now. You grew up obviously growing potatoes just like your dad did, and you're kind of transitioning more into a leadership role on the farm. Any special memories of growing up on the farm and farming with your dad?
I just consider myself very blessed to have the opportunity to grow up on a farm in a rural area in Minnesota. I absolutely love it. And the work ethic that my dad has put in me, I really enjoy that. And getting out to the farm early every morning, all spring, summer, fall, and winter. There's no off seasons on a farm, and just I really do enjoy it.
Zeke, I should add, Sander and I were having a conversation a while back, and he said to me, "You know what, Dad? I really didn't know what a Saturday was until I got off to college." So we laughed about that.
That's true. It's especially, you know, we're right around as cold as it is, you know, for us right now in the Midwest. Before you know it, it's going to be time to plant, and then it's all the way till harvest. And so this time of year, and when we get into winter, what sort of things do you guys do to kind of prep and get ready for the next year? What do you think about thinking about this time of year?
In a potato farm, there is so much planning that goes on versus, and not to dock other commodities, but potatoes are a lot more complicated than growing corn and soybeans and wheat. And we really enjoy that. But there's equipment to get ready for spring's work. And all winter long, checking potato warehouses, keeping them, making sure they're all in good order. But yeah, we always look forward to the spring's work too.
And being that you are so focused on keeping the seed on farm, I would imagine you have a pretty significant storage system.
We have many storage bins, because imagine we're growing generation one, generation two, generation three of 10 varieties. So there's a minimum of 30 separate bins, but this is what we signed up for. You know, this is what we enjoy doing. In going out and trying some of these new experimental varieties reminds me of a statement that Nancy Pelosi said a few years back. She said, and I quote, "We must pass the bill so we find out what's in it." And it's just like with a new potato variety, we have to increase the variety so we find out what's wrong with it. So that's what we keep on pursuing.
Does growing that many different varieties and having to keep the, you know, the different years separate and everything, besides just the volume of storage that you need, is there any other challenges that presents in prepping the bins and making sure the potatoes stay healthy, or is it just change variety by variety?
You know, all of our equipment is essentially kitchen food service, you know, sanitized. Everything is perfectly clean, and the lots are all separated, and there is a lot of management. The first year, you know, we only end up with maybe 3 or 4 tons, but then it's about 10x, then it's 30 tons, then it's 300 tons. So the storage management just gets to be larger volume naturally by the field year three.
That's interesting. And you're actually the name of your town, your mailing address, I'm sure you're out in a rural community, but Karlstad is the moose capital of the north. And apparently you have a moose festival. How would you describe the community where you live, and how big of a concern is a car moose collision where you're at?
Let me back up to the moose festival, because that's one of the, it's held the middle of August, and it's one of the highlights of our social year, because all of the people in the area get treated to a potato harvester leading the parade, distributing potato chips and Spudman bumper stickers and Potatoes USA memorabilia, and everybody looks forward to the potato harvester being in the parade. So that's a real highlight for us. Otherwise, climate change apparently has affected the moose, because the population has been reduced by 95% in the last 30 years. However, there still are some animals around that are beautiful. We live in a wildlife rich area. White-tailed deer are common, sharp-tailed grouse, ruffed grouse, coyote, fox. It's rich with wildlife here, but the moose, he's the tallest guy on the block.
You know, I ask about the car moose collision because I went out to Maine in Aroostook County, 2019. So I fly into the little airport there, and you walk into this airport's the size of a Secretary of State, pretty much, office. And they have right on the wall something about, "We lead the nation in car moose collisions." And a large number of these collisions can be fatal because the moose is so tall that when the car strikes the moose, it turns sideways and the antlers can, you know, go right into the cab. So as Don Flannery was driving me around Aroostook County, he's like, yeah, we really need to be back, you know, before dark, because then you can't see the moose. And I was actually kind of scared, you know. And I was wondering, you know, if you guys dealt with that too at all. But yeah, that's where I live, you know, you worry about deer collisions. But I mean, it's more of a damage to the car type concern as far as you're into it. Of course, you don't want to hit the deer and hurt the deer. But yeah, that was like a culture shock for me.
But you're right, Zeke. We in the back in the 70s and 80s, when moose populations were common, you would see a car that became a spontaneous convertible because the moose takes the roof off the car. So there's actually something good about having the population decreased here. So we're fine with it.
Okay. Before we go, I'd like to ask just about the consumption of potatoes. Do you have any favorite ways to eat potatoes? Any favorite recipes?
Last night I made mashed potatoes, and you can never go wrong with mashed potatoes. But my favorite way is to cut up the potatoes lengthwise and roast them in the oven with some spices. And personally, that's just my favorite. But
any go-to spices?
A little bit of Johnny's seasoning, seasoned salt. Let's see what else. Whatever I find in the drawer, the spice drawer.
Yeah, we experiment as you go, right?
Yeah, there's no set recipe. You can do anything you want with potatoes, and you're hard to go wrong.
It is true, a very versatile vegetable. And it is a vegetable. People need to remember that.
Yeah.
What about you, Justin?
Bake them, boil them, chip them, fry them, slice them, dice them, hash them, mash them. I like potatoes in all ways, but when you roast them with some lightly seasoned, I could eat a 5-gallon pail of those wedges. So that's my favorite way.
Yeah, you guys want to do the Chris Voigt all potato diet for a couple of months and see how that goes? For those who don't know, Chris Voigt is the executive director of the Washington State Potato Commission. He was famous about 10 years ago. He did an all-potato diet for 2 months where he ate something like 2,000 calories of potatoes. It's like 20 potatoes a day for 2 months, and he actually lost weight. And his blood pressure and his vitals and all that stuff improved too. So look up the all-potato diet on the internet if you're listening, and check out what Chris Voigt did. It's a great story. So guys, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for your time, and thanks for being here.
Thanks for what you do, Zeke. We look forward to the Spudman publication every month. Yep.
Thanks, Zeke.
Yep. Thanks, Tanner. Thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks again to 1-4 Group, our sponsor. Be sure to go check them out at 1-4group.com.